The Toby Gribbin Show. Highlights.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Craig Sheman is a former Jim Henson Company staff writer, Muppet historian, and president of the non-profit organisation The Jim Henson Legacy. Sheman wrote the Muppets Character Encyclopedia, and now he's released his latest book, Sam and Friends, the story of Jim Henson's first television show. And Craig is on the line with us here. How are you doing today?
Boy, that guy sounds impressive.
Yeah, he does.
You should try and book him.
Well, I've tried. So I think every Muppets fan knows the significance of Sam and Friends, but everyone else, most of them, has probably never heard of it, right?
Yeah, that's pretty true. For a lot of the people out there, and I think in the UK it might be a little different, but a lot of the world first heard of Jim Henson when he started doing Sesame Street. Yeah. And they didn't know, you know, he was sort of an overnight success, but they didn't know he had been doing this for almost 15 years at that point. And Sam and Friends is the very beginning, you know. He started doing this right when he was getting out of college, or I mean, sorry, right when he was getting out of high school. He had just started college or university, as you might say. And this was the beginning of everything that came later.
It's often noted that he used puppetry as a means to an end, really, to get into television. He didn't really want to be a puppeteer, despite that being what he was ultimately known for.
Yeah, exactly right. He wanted to work in television, and the only reason that he took up puppetry is that he heard that a local TV station was looking for a young puppeteer to do a TV show on the weekends. Trying to do a kids' version of this daily news show that was happening on CBS. So the local CBS station said, oh, we'll do what the national show does during the week. We'll do it on weekends, though, and we'll do it with kids.
Yeah.
So the network show during the week had puppeteer Bill Baird do lip syncs to records. So they said, well, we'll get a young puppeteer. And when Jim found out that that's what they wanted, he figured that was his way into the TV station. So he went to the library and got books out on puppetry and built some puppets and taught himself, really, how to puppeteer.
Now, what was it that interested you in writing a book about the story of Sam and Friends?
You know, that's a really good question, but I think part of it was that I had learned a bit about it. I started working as an intern at the Henson Company in 1987 when Jim was still alive. And then I went to work for the company when I graduated from college. And at that point, I would spend my free time in the office. And if I had a lunch hour, you could go to our conference room, which had a lot of old videotapes on the wall back when people were still using videotapes.
Yeah.
And you could take a videotape and put it in the machine and eat your lunch and watch some of these really old films. And that's when I was first exposed to this work, and I thought it was really fascinating. And over the years, and I spent time working at the company and getting to know Jane Henson, who was Jim's partner in these early days when she was Jane Nebel. They didn't marry until a couple of years into Sam and Friends. it was a really fascinating part. The more I heard from Jane and for many years, I said, well, this would be a really cool book, but there are only about 15 episodes that survive on film. And I didn't think there would be enough to work from. And then later on, the Henson Archives found some reel-to-reel tapes that Jim had made himself. And that represented more than 400 episodes. So you could hear the audio of the show. You couldn't see it. And then I thought, well, gee, this is really something. We can really do a book and sort of show the world exactly what the show – well, what the show represented, because for many years it was sort of just this footnote in the Henson story, and no one knew exactly what it was. It's like, well, Jim and Jane, they lip synced to songs and they did this, and it was, but there wasn't really a decent representation of what the show really was on a daily basis.
Now, because so little was known about it, how did you manage to write a book of 606 pages? Where did you get your information?
I didn't set out to write one that long. It just sort of, it's a combination of those reel-to-reel tapes that I mentioned, as well as the scripts that survived. Jane Henson kept a lot of the metal acetate recording discs that they would play from the control room. And Jim kept a lot of song lists. So there's this paper trail. Jim was really good about saving stuff. He didn't necessarily label things well, but he saved everything. So I was given access to the Jim Henson Company archives. So there were lots of documents and lots of recordings, and I was able to sort of piece together and cross-reference. You know, I could say, oh, here's this recording. Let me compare it against the script. And the script has no date on it, but the recording has a partial date. And I can put these things together and try and figure out where it all belonged. And then what's wonderful now is that a lot of organizations, news organizations, have online databases of their old newspapers. So yeah. I was able to look up TV listings from the Washington Evening Star and the Washington Post. And you could tell one of the pieces of the puzzle was, when exactly did Sam and Friends air during its whole run? Jane and Jim used to say, oh, it was on twice a day, and it was on before the Tonight Show and before the evening news. But that was only part of the run. It had a very complicated schedule where it jumped around. So nowadays, just sitting in the comfort of your home, you can look up all of these newspapers and go on a daily basis and look at the TV listings for 1955, 1956, and you can see what was on. You know, there was a gap. While I was doing this, I was doing the research. I kept Excel calendars of, you know, that whole run from 1955 through 1961. And if there was an episode, I would put it on the calendar. And then I'd find gaps and I'd go to the TV listings and say, why are there not two episodes on those days? And I can say, according to the newspaper, WRC, the station that Sam and Friends was on, was broadcasting the World Series on those 2 days. So there was no Sam and Friends. So short of actually seeing tapes or kinescopes of these episodes, this was a lot of information.
Yeah. It's interesting you say that Jim was really good at keeping tapes of things, because I think I heard somebody say once that he wasn't really the kind of guy to go back and watch his old stuff. He was always thinking about what he was going to do in the future. So why do you think he kept the tapes?
And it wasn't just the tapes. He kept so many things. He didn't necessarily go back and look at them himself, but he figured that they could be important to somebody someday. Yeah. And, one of the things, and I tell the story in the book, when I was working at Henson, early on, I was working in the archives. They hadn't yet hired the archivist, Karen Falk, who's been there for quite a long time and was instrumental in doing this book. So I was sort of filling in, and I had to go out to the offsite storage facility and sort through the public relations files, because I was working in public relations at the time. And someone from the production department gave me a list and said, here are about six or seven old production files. We don't need them anymore. You can have them if you want for archives. And I went out and I found those files, and in it were all of those Salmon Friends scripts and the first sketches of Rolf and the storyboards for Sesame Street, and basically all of the important pieces of paper from the first 15 years of the Henson Company. And Jim saved it all, but he just sent it to storage. It wasn't important to him, but he thought it would be important someday. And those boxes contain so much of what's been put on exhibit in the past few years. You know, a lot of really, really cool stuff.
Now, the book, of course, features a foreword from Frank Oz. And of all the people alive today, he's probably the most impressive person you could have got.
Yeah, Frank is really great. And I spent, you know, I worked at the Henson Company before I moved to the Jim Henson Legacy. I worked for the Henson Company for about 14 years. And I got to work fairly closely with Frank for some of that time, where I would write material for Miss Piggy going on the Today Show or various, you know, interviews. And I got to know him a bit and spend time with him. And he's an incredibly funny man. And he also had a great deal of appreciation and respect for Jim Henson and for the work that Jim did. You know, Jim brought him on right after Salmon Friends. Jim first met Frank, Salmon Friends was going on, but Frank was still in high school. So he was too young to come and work in New York. So Jerry Jewell, who is another friend of Frank's, got the job instead. But I figured that, you know, Frank was one of the last people standing, so to speak, who was around for that era. Even if he didn't work directly on Salmon Friends, he still worked on a lot of the stuff that came directly after Salmon Friends. So I reached out to Frank and I asked him to write the foreword. And I was expecting to have to give an in-depth argument and wear him down over months and months. And within 2 hours, he said, yeah, sure, I'll do it.
Wow.
And and it was just so, so kind of him. And he did a really nice foreword. And every time I sent him various, versions of the book to look at, he, you know, his only comment was, oh, you know, that foreword, it seems an awful lot about me. You can really cut it down if you want to. You know, early on, he was saying, how long do you want it to be? And I say, well, you know, if you make it, you know, 1,000 words is fine, or you can make it, you know, 100,000 words, I won't have to write the rest of the book. But he kept on saying, oh, you know, you can cut mine down. But it, you know, it was really, really nice. Yeah. So I didn't cut it.
So what was it like working for Jim Henson himself?
I had very little time working with Jim because I was only at the company a couple of years before he passed away. But I did, I can say that, he had a very laid back way of working. The first piece of material that I wrote that was performed by the Muppets was performed by Jim as Kermit. And it was when the Henson Company was first going to be sold to Disney. That deal ended up not happening at that time because Jim passed away. But they wanted to make this announcement at the Disney shareholder meeting. So they had Kermit, I think it had been announced before, but they wanted to have Kermit appear at the shareholder meeting. So we did a video of Kermit greeting the Disney shareholders.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Holders and having a little interaction with Michael Eisner, who was the head of the company at that time, head of Disney. And I wrote the script, and then it got rewritten. You know, I think all of the three people who were doing writing stuff at Henson Company at the time had hands on that, Bill Prady and Jim Lewis, and then myself, and some combination of us. You know, I wrote a first draft, then Jim, then Bill, and then it came back to me. And by the time it was done, it fell to me to go over to our New York studio where it was going to be taped. So I was going to be the writer on set. And, you know, Jim knew me a bit, but this was the first time that, you know, I was really spending, you know, time with him as a writer. And I was very nervous, but he was incredibly laid back. You know, I was sometimes nervous and intimidated by him, but not through anything he did. Mm-hmm. He was always about, you know, he was always about trying to make people, you know, feel at ease. He was very soft spoken. He definitely knew how he wanted things. But he had a very casual and laid back way of getting there. But I think I still have a tape where, you know, I had to deliver the Michael Eisner lines so Kermit could react to them. And I hear this, you know, I was, you know, probably like 23 at the time, and I hear my little soft voice, you know, doing the lines so Kermit can react. And, you know, I'm just trying to not miss my cues. And, you know, it went very well. And, you know, Jim was just really having fun with it. And he would slate the takes by putting his finger up in front of the camera. And then Kermit would react to seeing the finger. And, you know, he was just having fun.
Yeah.
My memory of him was just also enjoying things. You know, he, you know, I remember... one of the last times I spent time with him was when they were shooting a TV special called The Muppets at Walt Disney World. And I went down, I got to go down for that shoot because I was writing the press kit for the public relations department. And I remember sitting directly opposite Jim at one of the lunch breaks, and they had a great catering thing. And I just remember him enjoying that lunch. And, you know, it's like, oh, these brownies are really good. You know, he just appreciated things around him.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, shortly after his death, there was, of course, the TV special, The Muppets Celebrate Jim Henson. And you actually did a bit of puppetry in that, didn't you? You performed Waldorf.
I did. I was Waldorf, and I played a penguin, too.
Oh.
But it was one of those, they kind of referred to them as all hands on deck situations.
Yeah.
And the hands were quite literal, because they wanted big crowds, and you couldn't really afford to pay full rates for puppeteers, and a lot of times you didn't have that many people available anyway. So a lot of folks who are not necessarily full-time puppeteers would be pressed into service on those dates. So I was Waldorf, and Duncan Kenworthy, who is a esteemed producer of many things, he was Statler. And then, you know, you go down our row and it's Bill Prady, the writer who went on to co-create Big Bang Theory, and Cheryl Henson. And, you know, so it's a row of people who don't do this every day.
Yeah.
But at that time, I was exploring a possible future in puppetry, but I'm just not that good at it.
Yeah. Now, by complete coincidence, I've just looked up on the shelf here, and I've got one of your previous books, The Muppets Character Encyclopedia. How did you get the chance to work on that?
Well, that was interesting. Jim Lewis, who I worked with for many years at Henson, he has, you know, he was at working at Disney, and he'd been at Disney for quite some time as their sort of main Muppet in-house writer and editorial person. sort of responsible for maintaining character integrity. And they had decided to do this character encyclopedia with DK Publishing. And at first they said, well, Jim, do you want to write this? And Jim thought of me because I had this interest in the historical stuff, but I had also written a lot of character material. Mm. So they approached me, Disney and DK approached me to write this. And then Jim served as sort of the editorial supervisor. So I would write, 10 character write-ups at a time and send them to Jim, and we'd go back and forth and edit them and revise them. But it was a very, very fast process. The Sam and Friends book took like 3 or 4 years, but the character encyclopedia had to be done in a matter of months because it had to meet a specific release date. It was being done to promote the Muppets Most Wanted book, movie. So they had to get it in stores at a certain date to tie into that. So, it was a bit of a rush, but it was, it turned out pretty well.
Did you have to invent a lot of the facts about the characters, or was it all stuff that was true before?
I did invent some things. And so Jim and I would come up with things that we just thought were appropriate. And also we, it seemed like, I think it was Dr. Strangepork, we said, was from Hammelburg, Germany. And it seemed like, oh, well, Hammelburg, but also, hey, Hammelburg is where Hogan's Heroes took place. The POW camp right outside of Hammelburg. So, let's do a nod to classic television. And some of the things that we made up were also ways of doing little Easter eggs, because we were not permitted to mention anything in the real world in terms of the people who work in the workshop. It was all had to stay in character. So we made up a few things that were little homages to people that look after the Muppets.
Now, you're also the president of the Jim Henson Legacy. What exactly does that involve?
Well, the Jim Henson Legacy is an organization that Jane Henson started a couple of years after Jim passed away. And she really had a great amount of foresight in doing this, because she concluded that originally it was just an organization to sort of receive honors on Jim's behalf. So when people were reaching out, we want to name a school after Jim, or we want to do this. And she felt that it would be appropriate to have an organization that can communicate with people. And being a nonprofit, it could sort of isolate itself a little bit from the Henson Company. And then as time went on, and as the Henson Company was sold and then came back to the Henson family, and then the character groups were sold off to Sesame Workshop and to Disney, the importance of the legacy increased, because the Jim Henson Legacy is the only organization that could still celebrate and honor all of Jim's creations under his name. Because Sesame Street really can't use Jim Henson's name, and Disney doesn't use Jim Henson's name, and the Henson Company can use Jim Henson's name, but they can't really talk a lot about the classic Muppets or the Sesame characters. Yeah. And we're able to do things that put everything under that Jim Henson umbrella. And that was sort of Jane's thinking, is she was confident that the Henson characters would continue under these different ownerships, but she wanted to make sure that Jim Henson as an individual, as an artist, was never forgotten. So we're able to do things like museum exhibitions, we helped put together the permanent exhibits that are at the Museum of the Moving Image and the Center for Puppetry Arts. There's a traveling exhibit now that the Museum of the Moving Image does. And we did a touring screening series, and we did we worked with the Square Eyes Foundation in New Zealand a few years ago, and we did a huge event, the Jim Henson Retrospectacle, and it had, because it was a Jim Henson tribute, it was hosted and directed by Brett McKenzie, and I worked with Brett to write the script, but we were able to do this full concert in with the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra with the Muppets and characters from all of the character groups in on one stage. So we were able to have Sesame Street Muppets. We were able to have the classic Muppets with Kermit and Miss Piggy, and we were able to have Red Fraggle did a thing. We did the orchestra played a suite from The Dark Crystal. So we were able to put all of that in one concert. In a way that any one of the character group owners would have a hard time doing. But since we are a nonprofit organization and we were doing everything under Jim Henson's name, they allowed us to, you know, play with all of the characters.
That sounds like so much fun.
It was. It was really amazing.
Now, have you got any more books coming out after this current one, or is it too early to say?
It's too early to say. I have a couple of things that I want to work on. But for now, I'm just enjoying this one, and it was really a labor of love. And I think I have a couple of more projects that I'm thinking about, some relating to Jim Henson and some not. But for the time being, I just hope people will enjoy this one.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that I had a great time doing it, so I hope people have at least as much of a good time reading it.
And apart from books, is there anything else you're working on that you're allowed to talk about?
There are a couple of things I'm not allowed to talk about, but one of the ongoing things that I do in New York, I work with an organization called the Little Orchestra Society, and it's an organization that puts on classical music. You know, sometimes they don't like to call it classical music. Let's say serious music concerts. Aimed at children to try and make this kind of music a positive experience for them. So I've been writing and directing these concerts for several years. So we're about to begin our next season. So if anybody is listening who is coming to New York City, go to the Little Orchestra Society's website and you can get information about that.
Excellent. Well, this new book is called Sam and Friends, the story of Jim Henson's first television show. It's, of course, by Craig Sheman. And where is it available? Any particular places?
Yes. Well, it can be, if you are in the UK, and I think a lot of people listening to this are, Amazon UK has it. If you're not in the UK, I think my publisher, BearManorMedia.com, I don't think they ship outside of the US, but you could, if you're in the US, you can order it from BearManorMedia.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and I think Amazon everywhere has access to this. So it should be available most anywhere you are.
Excellent. Well, many thanks for joining us today. It's been very interesting to talk to you.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
The throbbing pulse of sound. The Toby Gribben Show.